Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Summer is drawing to a close. That means a raft of different chores in the garden and plenty of bounty at your local farmer's market. Joining us for all of that and more is author and gardening expert, Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Knapke. Welcome back.
Nice to be here.
Cooler and wetter summer than normal.
Oh, man, yeah.
What? How has that impacted our gardens?
Well,
what have you noticed?
What haven't I noticed? Oh, my gosh, so much has happened in our gardens. Well, more disease pressure.
Huh, why?
Cool, moist conditions really help fungi get going and bacterial infections. Also, this is combined with a warm winter. In my backyard, and I can't say it for everywhere in Central Ohio because we have different areas, but in my backyard, I did not go below 0 degrees Fahrenheit for more than a couple hours in three different instances, according to my weather station last winter. So a zone 7 winter means zone seven didn't go below zero. There are a lot of plants that survive, and there are a lot of insects that survive.
And fungi and disease, right.
Because it didn't get cold enough to really slow them down. Some of them just kept growing. I weeded in December, January, February, and March in my garden. I was able to find growing weeds throughout the winter, which meant some of my weeds didn't get as bad in the spring because I had a head start and I was gardening more in the winter than I've ever gardened before. So that combined with having more rain, having cooler temperatures, it got warm and then it got cool, and those shifts back and forth just kind of added to the insect and disease issues that we're having. It also changed how some of our vegetables and fruits grew. Delayed some, advanced others. And I believe that we are still 2 to 3 weeks behind our usual time frame. And usually by now we even out. We haven't. I think we've been pushed ahead in the season the whole season, which is unusual.
I've put in two more rows of lettuce, a row of chard, Swiss chard, and another row of spinach. I think I can get another harvest.
Easily.
Because of the coolness? I might not get the same sun penetration on the garden because it's starting to lower in the sky a little bit. And I've already noticed that some of the seeds aren't sprouting at the end. But wow.
And fortunately, it's your leafy vegetables that can take lower light levels.
Yes. If you can get them seeded, if you can get them to sprout at all.
Yeah. And our ground is finally warm enough that they should be sprouting. And the past several years, we have had extended falls where we haven't had the really hard frost hit us until November and even December.
Right.
So I don't know what's going to happen this year in fall, but I went outside yesterday morning and I breathed in deep breath and I thought, boy, this smells and feels like fall.
Fallish. Yes, absolutely. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the garden with Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Knapke. If you have questions or comments about that fall garden and have some questions about how your garden managed to survive over this weird summer, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, the hours. Deb and I could sit here and chew the fat for an hour. No problem.
And I brought all kinds of stuff.
I'm
ready.
Usual red new of books. It's like a library.
Just in case.
And but we always love to hear from the listeners, give us updates on how the garden's going. You made a point earlier, and I wondered if this matters, this going back and forth from hot, although it never, there was one day when it got up to about 100 degrees, I think, or the high 90s, but this back
high
and
90s.
Forth thing.
Yeah, and I remember there being several days in the low to mid, and then one high 90, and then we went back and sat in the 80s and then plummeted down into the 70s.
And here we are in the 70s again.
We're in the 70s.
And it's August.
With overnight lows that are going down. you know, I'm not complaining. I really like that kind of weather, but my tomato harvest has suffered a bit, although not as much as some of my friends. in northern Ohio who are just now getting ripe tomatoes. And I'm going to brag here. I had ripe cherry tomatoes July 1st.
I've had a terrible tomato year. Last year was bumper. This year, zilch. And I think I didn't fertilize enough. I think there's a lot of reasons.
Well, fertilizer.
I didn't fertilize at all.
Yeah. I like to use compost. Mm-hmm. I don't like to push my tomatoes too hard because the more fertilizer you use can sometimes, in certain circumstances, push more growth, and that growth is more attractive to disease and pests, especially the biting kind that say, oh, here's a juicy one. Also, again, we have that triangle of fertilizer, water, and light. Mm-hmm. And we've had good light this year, but we've had weird temperatures. Fertilizer, light, temperature, soil.
Does it affect anything when we have so much rain at the beginning of the season? Does it affect how, if you don't keep up that level of watering, can the plants do as well? Because I had a feeling that I had to leave for a week, weekends here and there, long weekends. Was out of town for a while, and I just didn't think they got enough moisture at a certain point.
And that's another thing. When we have a lot of rain, the roots will stay closer to the surface of the soil. So then if we do get a hot day, then that top 2 to 3 inches bakes. And that's where the roots are. So then your plants start flagging. You can actually see them sort of wilting in front of your eyes. And that's part of the issue with having roots way up, which is why we always recommend periodic deep watering instead of constant little bit of watering. Our rains, too, hit hard.
Yeah.
There was only one rain shower, and I've documented it. One rain shower where we got it gentle so it soaked in. When it hits hard, and if you have impermeable mulch or a crust on the top of your soil or even on grass, and it will take up some but not enough, the water just rolls off onto hard surfaces and then rolls into the sewers. So we've had these hard-hitting rains and the water doesn't stay around.
Does it matter if you have a raised bed?
Raised beds are better.
Okay.
Because raised beds usually have more friable soil, and the water goes in and sort of stays there, and then that water will percolate down into the soil below. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, raised beds, especially if they have a good soil mix in them that lets the rain go down, they're great.
Was this a good, a bad summer for anything in particular besides something like the tomatoes? I mean, I did real well until the deer came along and discovered the buffet in my backyard. I did real well with my chard, my spinach, and my lettuce.
Yeah.
They didn't like the lettuce so much. They love the Swiss chard. They're very picky.
Really?
Yeah, they'd lean over and get that row of chard, which was fabulous. I was kind of being stingy and waiting, like picky and waiting until it was perfect, and I should have
just eaten it.
I know. Gosh, they got it all in one night.
You might want to look at row covers for that, too.
I'm going to do that now. I'm going to do something with chicken wire or something over
or something,
the top.
Yeah,
because we've got it around the sides, but we're going to, because you can see where they gently lean over and push the chicken wire down. Because, we aim to please.
The most complaints that I heard this year, I heard about good berry crops. The peach crop has been phenomenal.
Yeah, 2 years in a row. That's what's so amazing.
And the apple crop, from what I've heard, has been good, although there was some intermittent hail a couple weeks ago or a week ago. I'm not exactly sure of the timing because it didn't happen for us, but it happened around some orchards, and there might have been some hail damage on some apples, but I really haven't heard much about it. Both the crops have been fantastic. The tomatoes have suffered just because there's what I call the quintuple threat. We had five things going on tomatoes. I wrote it down so I didn't forget anything. We had Septoria fungi, which is the little, it's a fungal problem. We had early blight. Some people had late blight. We had tomato anthracnose, white fly, was really bad this year. And then marmorated stink bug likes to come on the ripe tomato and chew into it and make these like little brown spots where they've eaten into it. And then sometimes a fungus comes in and then you get black yuck. So the tomatoes have had a tough time, especially going back and forth, and they don't set their flowers until you get about to the mid-70s. And then if you get into the upper 80s, they stop flowering because it's too hot.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that, that was good because that's where we've sat a lot of the time. But then we would get a cold snap or we get a heat snap, and then the flowers stop.
Are the same principles at play with something like a tomatillo plant?
Yes. Okay. My tomatillos were crap this year.
Yeah. I'd get flowers and then they just drop off.
And that
I think
happened.
I have one tomatilla, and who knows, you know, if that'll keep.
And I believe plants like chilies and tomatillos even like it a little bit warmer to set their flowers and then let the flowers turn into fruit. I had a volunteer tomatillo that did better, but they were really little tiny fruits. And the one that I planted that was supposed to have the big, wonderful fruits, it set a couple.
I was really looking forward to some cool fish chacos this fall. That's not going to happen.
Well, fortunately, somebody's had a good tomatillo year, so you can go to your farm market and support a farmer.
We're going to talk about farmers markets. And if you have questions about what to look for at the farmers markets, you can give us a call about that, too. 614-292-8513. I mentioned I can do some more leafy greens before the end of the season and probably do pretty well with those. Anything else you can plant?
Radishes.
Oh, that's right. They're fast.
They're fast. Radishes are great. I'm trying to think, peas. With the cool weather we've been having, this would be great for peas.
They prefer the cool.
They prefer the cool. So you might get a crop of peas this fall.
All right. We can try that.
There are some really fast filet beans, the bush, the little skinny ones. You might put some of those in, see if we get another late fall, and you might be eating beans out of your garden in mid to late November.
If you don't have anything started on the squash plants, is it too late? So you've got the full-grown plant, but, you know.
It's not too late. It depends if the flowers are, if you're getting both your female and male flowers. And the vine borer, I think the vine borer had two generations this year. Because I escaped the first generation because I heard of people having problems with vine borers, put mine in, and then lost some of my plants to vine borer.
Wait a minute. Male and female flowers?
Mm-hmm.
So on a garden variety, no pun intended, zucchini plant.
Pumpkins.
On the same plant, they have male and female?
Yes. I think zucchinis do. Wait a minute. They might have a perfect flower. But I know a lot of the cucurbits, which be your watermelons, your cantaloupes, you know, all your melons, all your squashes, they have male and female flowers. And you can tell the difference because the male flower will only have stamens and the female flower will have a pistil and also a slight swelling in the receptacle, you know, where the petals come out, and just underneath you'll see a slight swelling. That's where the fruit will develop. So sometimes a part of the problem of not getting fruit is you get too many male flowers. And I once heard, and I don't remember, that temperature has something to do with the formation of the different sexes. But I'm not positive. I'd have to go back and look that up.
We have a volunteer something. It's just gone crazy. It came out of our quince bush.
Okay.
And we bought it out. Maybe a bird dropped a seed or something like that. We don't know what it is. It's just as boisterous as can be, but it gets these beautiful, really bright orange, yellow flowers. They're gorgeous. And then they drop off and there's nothing. So we don't know what it's supposed to be growing on there, but we've now dragged it out into the lawn to give it more sun because, you know, why not?
Well, I've had great spaghetti squash already this year, but then the vine borer hit.
And it goes after the vine.
It goes the vine. It bores in, lays its eggs, and then the larva or whatever they are.
Yeah.
Eat the vine. It collapses, and then you'll notice your vine's just dying along the way.
Okay.
So they took out my best spaghetti squash vine, and there was one other that they went after, but I'm getting honey nuts. Those are the small butternuts, and they're so good. So sweet.
I'm getting hungry. Okay. We're going to continue our conversations. We're going to get to your calls. If you want to email us, you can do that as well. allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, talking late summer gardening with author, gardening expert, and Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. If you have a question or a comment for Deborah, we're all ears. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I devoted an entire raised bed to zinnias, and mostly zinnias, some cosmos, and some volunteer tomato plants that actually did give me a little bit of fruit. Does that put as much, take as much of a toll on the soil when you grow flowers like that as if you were going to do a vegetable garden?
It's an interesting question. Different species have different nutrition requirements,
right.
And so it all depends. That's why rotating your crops is so important.
Exactly.
If you are concerned about nitrogen fixation or whatever, you can next year put peas and beans in that bed. Plants like corn take a lot out of the soil.
Okay.
And some plants like tobacco can actually poison the soil. Put in...
I will not grow tobacco, but I know. Point taken,
right.
Yeah.
But so different species have different requirements. Anytime you plant anything there, it's taking something out of the soil, which is nice about leaving, as long as the plant parts do not have disease on them, leaving some of your plants in the soil to go back in.
Yeah.
And I do that routinely. In fact, I have bumper crops of chives.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes I think I need some nutrition over here. I cut off all the chive tops and put it over as a green mulch on something else. And they just keep growing and growing and growing. So,
good old chives.
Good old chives.
Okay, Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine.
Good.
I had a question. I started gardening this year, and I tried to grow literally everything. But a couple weeks ago, I noticed on my pumpkin plants, I noticed like a white powder on the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got on my zucchinis and cucumbers as well. And then a couple of days after the powder started, wherever it was at, the plant itself was just dead. Like, the leaves, the vine, and everything died off.
What are we talking about here, Deb?
Well, it looks like you might have actually had two things going on, because the first is probably powdery mildew. And that is one of the diseases that loves this back and forth, the cool, wet, moist, humid conditions. But for it to die in a couple days, that's not powdery mildew. That might have been the vine borer. And if you were to look at your vines and see if there's some material, like chewed material on the ground or a hole in the vine, you might see evidence of the vine borer, because often you don't notice it until all of a sudden the vine dies, even though they've been working on it probably for a little while. So I think it was a 1-2 punch that took out your cucurbits, and I'm sorry.
Keep it up, Chris. Don't give up.
And be careful about trying everything as a first-time gardener. Get good at a couple things at a time and then start adding it all together. Otherwise, you can get frustrated. But I hope you got some fruit out of it before the vines went down.
Thanks for that call, Chris. Steve in Newark, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
We just were at a garden center locally and saw saffron crocus bulbs, and we bought a bunch of them.
Saffron crocus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after getting them home and doing a little bit of reading, we find that they probably like drier climate than what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering if you had any tips on this, and also for like organic fertilizing.
Okay. I have grown saffron crocus off and on for several years.
What is it? What's this distinction
here?
Well,
saffron comes from crocus. Saffron is the stamens of Crocus sativa, which is the crocus from Turkey and the Caucasus Mountains and Central Asia. And it is a cute little fall blooming crocus. Bless you.
Thank you.
Cute little fall blooming crocus, blue. But what's important?
Fall blooming.
It's fall blooming. Fall blooming crocus. There's a whole raft of species of crocus that bloom in the fall, and then another raft that bloom in the spring. So last year I planted 60 crocus sativa bulbs because in the past I've done, you know, five here, five there. And I decided to figure out where in my yard they would work and where they wouldn't. So this is a very timely question, Steve. And I've noticed that where they have come up the best this year, and we had a mild winter, they're really more of a zone six bulb, which is what we're told we're in right now. But the ones that are coming back are the ones that are in my rock gardens and where they're on a slope, where the water drains away from them. So, yes, in drier climates, rocky, gritty soil, our clay soils may actually hold a little bit too much water around them in the winter. So it's important to make sure that you have added compost. When you talked about fertilizer, compost is good. There are some organic bulb products, but do not get any that have bone meal in them because that is a sign that says supper here to squirrels and chipmunks. They can smell it.
I'll be darned.
So be careful about that.
That explains so much.
Yeah.
Golly.
So if you have that, like an elevation or where water drains away from the soil, that'd be one of the better places to put your Crocus sativa bulbs. And then when they come up and you harvest those stamens and you dry them in your kitchen on a couple layers of paper towels and then use it in your, saffron is in curry and it's in, what am I thinking, the Spanish dish?
Oh, paella.
Paella. Oh, yes. And you make paella with your own saffron and say, hey, I grew that.
Wow.
But yes, dry. They are killed by winter wet soils and summer wet soils. So again, where they've grown the best in my yard is in my rock gardens and where I have elevation change so the water does not sit around those bulbs. So I hope that helps. And good luck. It's fun.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Steve, for that call. Carl in Lancaster. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
How you doing today?
Good.
Real good.
Great.
Go ahead.
Oh, I grow mostly tomatoes and peppers, hot, sweet, you know, a couple of varieties of sweet, two or three varieties of hot.
Mm-hmm.
And because of where I grow, and I like a lot of tomatoes. Like this year, I had out 18 tomato plants and half a dozen varieties. But I can't really rotate my crops. I don't have anything to rotate it with. Is there something, fertilizer or a type of compost I should put down in the fall to get ready for the next spring?
Rotation is really, really important with tomatoes. If you need to find someplace else to plant them, or you need to do what I'm going to be doing next year, which is planting in containers and a raised bed somewhere else on our property. We have gotten to the point in our enclosed area where I've been growing tomatoes for the past 10 years.
Which is also your protected area.
My protected area. I know. Tony and I are discussing this. Well, he says, so in other words, I'm building another enclosure. And I said, honey. So...
But to keep the deer out.
That's
yeah.
right. Otherwise, they eat them right down.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot. There's too much disease pressure in the land that we have that's enclosed. So I'm going to. I have a dear friend of mine just gave me five huge pots, and I am going to do pot culture, not cannabis, but. Containers. Mm-hmm. I should be careful with that word anymore,
yeah,
don't we?
Container gardening, right.
Yeah, container gardening. And then a raised bed somewhere else in the yard. And if You can grow tomatoes in the same place for 2 years max, and the third year you're going to see a lot of disease. It's just the nature of it.
How many years do you have to take off?
It's recommended you take off, I've seen anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and that's why I've run out of time and room in my enclosed area. I have 3 rotational spaces, and it's just not, I have too much disease. So I'm going to do container gardening for a while. And like you, I like a lot of tomatoes. I have 24 plants and of tomatoes, and next year I'm only going to have 10, and I'm hoping I won't go through withdrawal. But I'm hoping that a bigger yield on these 10 will make up for not having 24.
All I wanted was 4 plants. Last year I had so many tomatoes, I was making tomato jam.
Mm-hmm. Yum.
Which was really good.
Yes, it is. So I hope that helps, Carl.
And, thank you, Carl.
Yeah.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Ben. He says, we recently relocated to Sunbury from Clintonville, so I have to head to adjust to different growing conditions this year, yet my garden took off. My tomato harvest, he's bragging. My tomato harvest has been the best yet.
Good.
The strange thing I did encounter, however, was with my pumpkins. I grow heirloom pie pumpkins this year, and by the end of July, I was harvesting them. I thought this was awfully early for harvesting pumpkins. Is that too early? Well, if they're ready, they're ready. But do you say, Debbie Kanapke?
Again, I harvested my first spaghetti squash in the middle of July, which is so unusual for me. So everything's early. We harvested our garlic 2.5 weeks earlier than we ever harvested in the past 16 years that we've been growing. We've had an earlier season. Even though we had cool spring soils, some crops just took off. And I think the squashes were one of them. This is the earliest I've ever had winter squash. And it's the end of August, and now my vines are already senescing. They look like what they look like in the middle of September, which is kind of strange.
It's great. Strange indeed. Let's see. Kyle and Amanda. Hi, Kyle. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering about fungus and tomatoes. We had fungus take over basically our whole garden, and I understand a lot of it overwinters, so I was wondering what I can do to prevent it from taking over next summer.
For your tomatoes, you're asking about tomatoes particularly?
Mm-hmm. Well, it took over other plants too, but the tomatoes got the worst. They're basically almost dead at this point.
And there were different fungi that hit different plants too, so it's not the same organism hitting everything. With your tomatoes, it is essential to clean up everything off the ground and put it somewhere. I have a bad compost pile, and in that bad compost pile goes all my diseased plants and whatever, and I never take anything out of it. And it goes down to nothing over time. And tomatoes, even if they're not diseased, I do not put them in my good compost pile because I may not be able to see what's going on. So that's one. And two, you cannot grow tomatoes in the same place as you grew them last year if you had that much disease. You either have to put them in containers or raised bed or somewhere else, because that soil, even though you're going to clean it up as best you can, that soil's already taken in a lot of the fungi.
And that's going to take years.
That's going to take several years. One of these times, I'm going to experiment with hot chicken manure, although my neighbors may not love me after that, and try to burn it out. Oh, it stinks.
Okay.
It really does. And for a couple weeks. So they're not going to be real happy with me.
Okay.
So I'll have to take over lots of food to them. And maybe a bottle of wine.
Do you like do shout outs to your neighbors from here sometimes? Like, did you hear me on the show?
Yeah. So anyways, it sounds like you really have to do a good cleanup and plant something different there. Try a different crop. Not tomatoes in the same place where you had them this year.
The good news is there's still lots of tomatoes at the farmer's market. That's where I cling to that. Kyla, sorry for mispronouncing your name before. Kyla and Amanda, thank you so much for that call. Now I'm looking here at, I'm curious. Chuck and Gahanna, you're on the air. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for this topical show. It's the timeliness is great. I have a question, though, that's off topic, and it concerns coffee trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I've long wanted to have more than just a little one in the house. I wanted to plant coffee trees outside, but I live in Columbus, and I understand that those are, you know, for tropical climates, and mm-hmm. you need high elevation. But I thought perhaps with our global climate change coming on and global warming
upside
and the mild yeah. winters and very little snow here in Columbus, that perhaps there was a hardy variety of Arabica tree that I could plant outside.
Oh, if it were only so. Unfortunately, one has not been developed for us cold people in cold climates. Coffee trees are really zone 9, 10, maybe 8. Oof, I don't know. And we're not there yet. Although supposedly by 2075, Ohio will be zone 8 if the current global climate change continues at its current path. But neither of us will be around in 2075 to grow our coffee trees. So the best thing I can say to you is put it in a large container and bring it in and out from your house to outside. You can always experiment by putting burlap around them. But, you know, we've had two Zone 7 winters in a row, and I have a feeling Mother Nature is not going to let us get away with number 3. But I don't know. I never know. But good luck with your experiments.
All right, Chuck, good luck with that. Speaking of, I have a banana tree or banana plant, and we're not trying to get any fruit out of it. But we mm-hmm. brought it outside this summer, and it's just huge. It loves it. It's gorgeous. Is there anything I should look for when I bring it back in, though, in the winter?
You mean like
bugs?
Little
or...
bugs bringing back in? Yeah, you should, because chances are that there will be bugs in the leaf bases, so take a look. I have a friend who puts all of his bananas and all of his tropical plants. It's an amazing garden in Indianapolis. And he stores all of his stuff downstairs in plastic bags and then brings them out in the spring and then
Wait,
puts them back out.
He stores them in plastic
mm-hmm,
bags?
Plastic bags. I have to talk to Irvin more about exactly what he does, but he has tons and tons and tons of tropicals, and some he left out last year as an experiment, and many of them came back because Indianapolis also had its own
right.
seven winter.
Right. We will take more calls. We'll get to some more emails with Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage, when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about late summer gardening with my guest, Deborah Kanapke, author, gardening expert, known as Ohio's Gardening Stage. Sage.
That's all right. I've always wanted to go on the stage.
Stage. Deborah's with me now. We've got emails, we've got calls, but I wanted to get to something that you wanted to talk about and I'm interested in. A study was published in the journal Conservation Biology, and it asks whether people are hardwired by evolution to ignore the world of vegetation. The concept is called plant blindness, and I was wondering what you make of it.
It's an interesting concept. It's actually been around for a long time, but now it's coming to the fore as one of the reasons that some people postulate that horticulture and agriculture are less liked as professions is that we don't think plants are important, even though they feed us. And if it wasn't for plants, there wouldn't be oxygen on this planet, even though the cyanobacteria helped out too. Many people see plants as wallpaper. They don't see them as entities. They don't respect them.
They haven't seen Avatar then.
That's right. They haven't. Or they just think Avatar's a really fun show. But James Cameron kind of got it in Avatar. Plants, to some people, are intelligent, sentient beings. It depends on how far you want to go with this. But I truly believe that plants react to their environment. They communicate. Susan Simard.
Including their emotional environment.
Yes, their emotional environment. Susan Simard of University of British Columbia has spent 30 years of her life investigating plant communication. So just very, very cool. But people don't see plants.
Plants represent 57% of endangered species mm-hmm. overall, but receive less than 4% of endangered species funding.
Mm-hmm.
I read this in conjunction with this study. That's an issue. And you think is do you think you agree with the researchers that that's a function of seeing plants as wallpaper?
Yeah. And that and also animals tend to be more charismatic. You know, if you're an orchid, people love you. If you're just some little pond weed that's really important for nitrogen fixation, first of all, you're not pretty. And who cares about nitrogen fixation or who cares about oxygenating water? Most people don't think about that. So the functionality of plants is really important. And so a lot of times, no matter what I'm talking about in classes or talks, I will bring up how important plants are to us. Ecological services, you can call it that if you want, like cleaning our air, noise reduction, etc. But there's just a lot to it. We could do a whole program on plant blindness.
Maybe we will someday.
And what plants do for us.
Let's turn to John Hilliard now but on phone. He has an infancy. John and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I, for the first time this year, ventured into planting potatoes.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it was a bumper crop. I think they're Yukon Gold. Is that
fair? Yeah, great.
They were just enormous. But I had an infestation of the Colorado potato beet.
Yes.
And it was all out war. And eventually I gave up and I put 7 dust on there trying to kill them. That didn't work either. I have two-part question. How do you get rid of the bugs? And the second part is, being a tuber, do those chemicals readily get into the potatoes? Because I thought they tasted kind of funny, and I'm not going to eat them.
Anything that you put on a plant, I'm going to answer the second question first, has the probability of being translocated to any other part of the plant. Whether 7 went into your potatoes, I can't answer that. I don't know. But if you put something on your plants and something you're going to eat, you need to think about that. So your choice, if something tastes funny, that is nature's way of telling you maybe don't eat this. As to how to get rid of the Colorado potato beetle.
So gross.
Yeah. I need to give you specific recommendations for that, which I need to look up. There are different, there is a product called spinosad or spinosad. It's a bacterial kind of application, but unfortunately, it can affect other beneficial insects too, and that's our problem. So I'll tell you what. I'm going to write up something and I will put it on the All Sides Facebook page, and it will be done by tomorrow afternoon. But there are very pointed recommendations, and a very good resource for any gardener are the fact sheets by Ohio State University. And you can access that through the Beagle, BYGL. BYGL.OSU.EDU. And you can get on there and search for articles on potatoes, and then also look for the Ohio Line fact sheets. And I'm sure there are several on potatoes.
John, good luck with that. Sorry to hear about your potatoes. Email from Irene. She says, last year I had a significant Japanese beetle problem. Mm-hmm. This summer I saw just a few of these beetles. Has this been your experience? I'm not complaining, but I'm curious for the reason behind this. Given the mild winter we had, I would have thought the Japanese beetles would have been worse this summer.
The reports of Japanese beetles across central, actually all of Ohio, has been really sporadic. Some people got hit hard and some people hardly saw any. I think it was the unluck of the draw if you got them this year. I had a very heavy crop, and last year I didn't. So I got your Japanese beetles, Irene.
Okay.
So, and I'm not sure why. It's one of those questions I cannot answer other than where they tended to go into the soil and then come out.
Bill in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill. Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to grow hollyhocks, but as they come up, just a few leaves, they get these yellowish gold spots on the underside of the leaf, and then they die. The leaves die off.
Mm-hmm.
What can I looked up to, and it said just on the internet, it said just to trim the stems off. Well, I did that, but they just keep that new stems come up and they get that same killing activity.
It sounds like you have hollyhock rust. It is a fungus that affects the leaves, and a lot of times if they're big plants, you know, they'll still flower, and you know, if you can get them started before they get the rust. And the rust goes on the wind. The spores go on the wind and seem to find hollyhocks. I used to grow them all the time, and I got tired of the rust problem. And I'll probably come back to them someday, but I'm going to let maybe, hopefully it'll go away because it goes into the soil.
I see a lot of hollyhocks up in the Upper Peninsula. Do they like cooler climates?
They do like it a little bit cooler.
Okay.
Although, you know, I'm trying to think when I had my best hollyhocks, what were the summers like? But most plants prefer under 86 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So in the 70s and 80s are really great for most plants, unless they're a cactus or a succulent. So with the rust, I don't know what to recommend other than trying a different place in your garden to grow them. And possibly, sounds like you're starting from seed, start them somewhere else and not in the same place where you're having the disease problems.
Okay. All right, Bill, thanks for that call. Email from Dorothy. She said, this fall I plan to plant tulips in large pots that I will store over the winter in unheated sheds. Until it gets really cold, can I plant lettuce and spinach above the tulip bulbs in the pots?
Sure, why not?
Wow.
I think that's great.
Double duty.
What a great idea. And by the time the tulips are coming up, you can, and actually tulip bulbs are edible, although I don't know that you'd like the flavor, but squirrels and chipmunks sure do.
Yeah.
But no, what a fantastic idea. Anytime you can combine functionality with beauty, I think that's wonderful.
All right. You get a thumbs up from Deb Kanapke. Dorothy, thanks for that email. Let's see. Now I am turning to David in North Linden. You're on the air. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions about crocuses.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to mask their presence to prevent the squirrels finding them and digging them up? I thought maybe toss them in a bowl with chipotle chili powder before I plant them.
That sounds fantastic, but go on.
And what condition should I wait for? I've planted daffodils with success, but what conditions do I wait for to plant the crocuses?
Okay, crocuses, I like to plant anywhere from October 15th to November 15th, December 1st. I've even planted crocuses.
As long as you can get them in the ground.
As long as you can get them in the ground. I once planted on Christmas Eve, but don't do that. It's better between October 15th and November 15th for us. And it would be nice if we had a rain before so the soil was soft and it was easier for you to dig. As to chipotle pepper, that sounds fantastic, although they'll still be digging, and it may or may not dissuade them, but the chipotle pepper might be better on top of the ground, especially right after you plant them, because these animals, the chipmunks and squirrels, can smell overturned soil, so they go and dig in those areas. What I have done is I put down deer netting and then I put flags so that I don't trip over that area because I've done that because I plant in the lawn. So the deer netting is black plastic and they don't like getting their feet caught in this deer netting. So you just have to tack it down with some earth staples. They're like big, U-shaped, metal things that you can purchase probably at your garden center. We purchased 1,000 of them online. Yeah. Well, I needed them for something else. So let me know if you need any. But that will dissuade them even more than the chipotle pepper because they don't like getting caught.
There you go. David, thanks a lot for that call. Let's see. Mike in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I tuned in earlier, and I heard the very good and very appropriate for me story about the tomatoes and you needing to move your tomatoes because the soil had gotten depleted.
It wasn't the soil depleted, but a buildup of pathogens in the soil and in the area.
Yeah, because I was having the yellow spot and the black spot on the tomatoes. And anyway, so I'm moving my tomatoes. Now, my other question is, I planted peas early this spring. I got a beautiful crop of peas.
Mm-hmm.
Once they were done producing, I pulled them up, retilled the area where they'd been, put some compost in it and tilled that in, and I planted green beans. But the green beans have been really, really weak and puny. And I'm just wondering, could that be a function of the soil, pathogens in the soil also, or is there a problem with me following the peas up with beans?
Not at all. They're both in the same family and they fix nitrogen. It might be that you put compost in. It might be that it was just a bad bean year. It depends on which type you have. I tend to plant pole beans. Were yours bush or pole?
Mike?
Oh, he might.
Bush.
Okay. And I have had less success with bush beans. I know people that get tons and tons from bush beans, but I've always had better luck with pole beans. So I don't know if maybe you just... it wasn't right this year for beans. We also did not have the heat. Beans do like a little bit of heat to get going here, and that might have been part of your problem. So, no, that wasn't an issue. But you could put in some more peas now for a fall crop.
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot for that. Email from BJ. I am interested in creating an organic garden in my backyard in a raised bed. Is it possible to do so while still having your lawn treated, like with grubs, fertilizer, weed control, etc.?
Even though you have a raised bed, if you are having your lawn treated, you're probably, there is the possibility of overspray or of some of those chemicals moving into your bed, although it's a slight possibility. It depends whether you're having liquid feed or granular applications. If you want to be an organic gardener, that means you need to do that in your lawn too. It's an all-in thing because there will be some effect from your grass to your food beds. And yeah.
Sarah in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a very large gardenia that has been in the family for probably close to 30 years. And I move it in for the winter, move it out for the summer. It's getting to a point where I'm probably not going to be able to move it out for much longer. But it gets terrible scale in the winter. And I wondered if there's something to prevent that or to treat it once it's going on.
And I have the same issue and tend to lose my gardenias that way. Same with citrus. There are some systemic products you can use. They are conventional, not organic. I have heard of organic ways of getting rid of scale, but I've not tried them. I'll tell you what, this is another one I will put on some ideas for you on Facebook on the All Sides page by tomorrow. And you can try them out and let me know how they go. Usually I clean off the scale. I try to keep track of them and clean it off with alcohol swabs or just soapy water.
Sarah, thanks a lot for that call. And real quick, we do have another caller. We don't have time for it, but they want to know where you get soil for a raised bed garden.
I have gone and gotten organic soils from different garden centers around town. There's a wonderful one called Mechanic Organics from Maine, and there are lots of them out there. But I do get organic soils for my containers.
Okay. Hopefully that helps, Dan. Another hour has flown by.
They
Deborah
do fly
Knapke.
Back. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it, as usual.
Thank you. I love being here.
Thanks to our callers and our emailers. All great questions. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.